Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. So we're reading from the sixth canto, chapter 8, text number 21. Srila Prabhupada's translation. May Lord Madhusudana, who carries a bow, very fearful for the demons, protect me during the fifth part of the day. In the evening, may Lord Madhava, appearing as Brahma, Vishnu, and Maheshwara, protect me. And in the beginning of night, may Lord Rishikesh protect me. At the dead of night, in the second and third parts of night, may Lord Padmanava alone protect me. And there's no purport, so I'm going to read a few verses until there's a purport. May the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who bears the Srivats on his chest, protect me after midnight until the sky becomes pinkish. May Lord Janardhan, who carries a sword in his hand, protect me at the end of night during the last four gatikas of night. May Lord Damodar protect me in the early morning, and may Lord Vishveshwara protect me during the junctions of day and night. Text 23, translation. Set into motion by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in wandering in all the four directions, the disc of the Supreme Lord has sharp edges, as destructive as the fire of devastation at the end of the millennium. As a blazing fire burns dry grass to ashes with the assistance of the breeze, may that Sudarshan Chakra burn our enemies to ashes. Text 24. O club in the hand of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, you produce sparks of fire as powerful as thunderbolts, and you are extremely dear to the Lord. I am also his servant. Therefore, kindly help me pound to pieces the evil living beings known as Kushmandas, Vainayakas, Yakshas, Rakshasas, Bhutas, and Grahas. Please pulverize them. Text 25. Translation. O best of conch shells, O Panchanjanya, in the hands of the Lord, you are always filled with the breath of Lord Krishna. Therefore, you create a fearful sound vibration that causes trembling in the hearts of enemies like the Rakshasas, Pramata ghosts, Pretas, Matas, Pishchachas, and Brahmana ghosts with fearful eyes. Text 26. O King of sharp-edged swords, you are engaged by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Please cut the soldiers of my enemies to pieces. Please cut them to pieces. O shield marked with 100 brilliant moon-like circles, please cover the eyes of the sinful enemies. Pluck out their sinful eyes. Text 27 and 28. Still no purport. May the glorification of the transcendental name, form, qualities, and paraphernalia of the Supreme Personality of Godhead protect us from the influence of bad planets, meteors, envious human beings, serpents, scorpions, and animals like tigers and wolves. May it protect us from ghosts and the material elements like earth, water, fire, and air. And may it also protect us from lightning and our past sins. We are always afraid of these hindrances to our auspicious life. Therefore, may they all be completely destroyed by the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. 29. Lord Garuda, the carrier of Lord Vishnu, is the most worshipable Lord, for he is as powerful as the Supreme Lord himself. He is the personified Vedas, and he is worshipped by selected verses. May he protect us from all dangerous conditions, and may Lord Vishvasena, the personality of Godhead, also protect us from all dangers by his holy names. Text 30. May the Supreme Personality of Godhead's holy names, his transcendental forms, his carriers, and all the weapons decorating him as personal associates protect our intelligence, senses, mind, and life air from all dangers. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. There are various associates of the Transcendental Personality of Godhead, and his weapons and carrier are among them. In the spiritual world, nothing is material. The sword, bow, club, disc, and everything decorating the personal body of the Lord are spiritual living force. Therefore, the Lord is called Avadya Gyana, indicating that there is no difference between him and his names, forms, qualities, weapons, and so on. Anything pertaining to him is in the same category of spiritual existence. They are all engaged in the service of the Lord in varieties of spiritual forms. So the verse again is, may Lord Madhusudana, who carries a bow very fearful for the demons, protect me during the fifth part of the day. In the evening, may Lord Madhava, appearing as Brahma, Vishnu, and Maheshwara, protect me. And in the beginning of night, may Lord Rishikesh protect me. At the dead of night, in the second and third parts of night, may Lord Padmanava alone protect me. So I'm a little nervous. I'm not used to giving class. And, of course, these verses of the Narayana Kavacha shield, as Radhanath Maharaj was pointing out a few days ago, it's a cry for help. And actually, I need all of yours help. You've already helped me so much in my stay here already. It's this temple is an amazing place. Anyways, I was been asked by many devotees to tell some pastimes of Srila Prabhupada and Radhanath Swami Maharaj. I mean, I have no qualification to be sitting up here at all. Many advanced, you're all so advanced devotees, sannyasis, sitting here. But I know that it purifies me to speak, and I want to try to glorify Krishna and Srila Prabhupada. So I'm trying to do that here. I've been associating with the devotees and Srila Prabhupada for many years. Of course, it doesn't say much for my advancement. But I have many very precious memories of Srila Prabhupada in my heart. And by devotees asking me to speak about them, it lets me remember them again. And, you know, I'm very grateful to be able to share these. The first time that I saw Srila Prabhupada personally was in 1971 in Boston. I joined the Boston Temple in 1970. I moved in. I was only 16 years old. I was a completely crazy hippie, and somehow or other, I got, you know, the mercy of devotees, and they let me stay and do some service. And of course, everyone can do something in devotional service, no matter who we are, no matter how limited we may be or how insignificant we are. We can all do something to help our spiritual master, you know, push on this Krishna consciousness movement. So anyways, I was very, very fortunate to be able to associate with the devotees. And when I joined in Boston, ISKCON Press was there. It happened to be the biggest temple in ISKCON at the time, 1970, when ISKCON Press was there. There was maybe 60 devotees. And we were very poor, although we were buying a three-story house that ISKCON Press was in. And I remember the mortgage on the house was $1,000 a month. It was a whole big house, which today you can't even get a little apartment, you know, for $1,000 a month. But we had trouble getting the Lakshmi every month when the mortgage was due. Satsarup Maharaj, who was the temple president, would hold an istagosi, and he would ask people if they had any rich relatives or any relatives that had any money, because we didn't have enough money to pay the mortgage. And usually, even like in the dead of winter, we would have to make decision to try to get enough money, so we'd have to like cut the gas and oil so there would be no hot water and no heat in the temple. And an interesting story is that Srila Prabhupada gave some advice that all devotees should eat like 4 or 5 chickpeas every day, and that would make them very healthy. So all the temples were starting to do that. But he said if you eat more than, you know, 4 or 5 chickpeas, that was not good because it would make you lusty. So they would very carefully just give everybody 4 or 5 chickpeas for breakfast. But as we were running out of money to Jai Maharaj, thank you. And so as we were running out of money to pay for the mortgage that month, we also ran out of chickpeas. But you know, we had some, so they would soak the chickpeas and they would split them in 4 pieces, so everybody would get a little piece of chickpea. And Boston Temple was actually known around the movement at that time for being very poor, that they had to, you know, break a chickpea into 4 pieces and to give it to the devotees. But a very wonderful time, very, you know, advanced devotees were there. Satsarup Das Maharaj was the temple president, Haridainanda Maharaj was a temple commander. You know, all the Prajumna was there, you know, the Sanskrit, all the artists, Jadarani, Muralidhar, Prickett, Bhadraj. I don't see him now, but Gaurvani's parents, Bhadraj and Rukmini, were there, and they were actually very kind to me and, you know, helped me in my early days in devotional service. But anyways, the ISKCON Press in March of 71 moved down to New York. And then there was just Satsrup Maharaj and just a handful of devotees that stayed there. And Srila Prabhupada, Satsrup wrote a letter recommending myself and some other devotees to become initiated. And Prabhupada wrote back that he would be coming there. And I think it was either March or April, and that we should, you know, wait. And when he comes, he'll give initiations. And then in the letter, he also said, and in the meantime, chant hard. That was one instruction that I got from Prabhupada, to chant hard. So, and anyway, in 1971, Srila Prabhupada was finally coming to the temple there. He was going to install the deities, and he did, and give initiations. And, you know, we still were very, very poor. And there was this one gentleman, his name was Leon, who used to come and visit the temple. And he convinced Satsrup. Satsrup, I don't know, those who don't know him, he's very, very humble and dedicated devotee of Srila Prabhupada. Excuse me. But this gentleman, Leon, convinced Satsrup that the temple wasn't good enough for Prabhupada, because Srila Prabhupada is Jagat Guru, you know, spiritual master of the whole universe, and they should offer him the best. So he proposed that he would rent the best hotel in Boston, the Four Seasons Hotel, and he would rent this penthouse suite, the nicest one. And so Satsrup agreed to that, and the devotees went, and they decorated this hotel room very nicely with flowers and things. And then when Srila Prabhupada came to Boston, I met him at the airport. A very wonderful time, first time seeing Srila Prabhupada get off the airplane, and he came into the airport, and we had big roaring kirtan for Srila Prabhupada. And then he walked through the airport as we were giving, you know, huge kirtan. He got into his car and, you know, drove away to go to the temple. And of course, I was just, you know, wanted to go with him, and I was very disappointed, you know, being left behind. But the devotee had to go get his parked car, and by the time I got to the temple, Prabhupada was like almost finished with his lecture. I just got to hear the very ending of his lecture. But he gave a wonderful lecture, and then they brought him into, there was three rooms that we had fixed for Srila Prabhupada, and they weren't even finished yet. One room was a little more finished, and that's the one that Srila Prabhupada went into. It was by maybe 10 by 12 foot, and just a simple little table, and, you know, a little flat cushion for Prabhupada to sit in there. And he gave a darshan with the devotees. And at a certain point, Satsrupa said, Srila Prabhupada, it's getting late, and we've rented this hotel room for you in Boston, and we have to get going now. And Prabhupada said, hotel room? He said, I'm not going. And then he said, the country is in the mode of goodness, and the city is in the mode of passion, but a hotel is simply a brothel. He said, I'm not going. And he said, but the temple is Vaikuntha. And he stayed there in that one little room. He slept on the floor. We just had one small mat for Srila Prabhupada. And he wouldn't go to even though it was, you know, the nicest hotel in all of Boston, he preferred to stay in the temple. And, of course, devotees, they went to the hotel. They brought back some of the flowers, decorated Prabhupada's room a little bit nicer. But through Prabhupada's, the whole stay, he stayed in Boston, I think, like 2.5 days. You know, he just stayed in that one room the whole time. And there was like a little hallway about 6 feet from where Prabhupada's door was. And then there was like the bathrooms, the men's bathrooms and the women's bathroom. And of course, we closed off the men's bathroom just for Prabhupada's use. And of course, so we had to share, the women and the men had to share the women's bathroom. And I can remember I was waiting to use the bathroom. They were just like standing right in front of Prabhupada's door. Me and another devotee, Patita Pavan Prabhu. And all of a sudden, we were just waiting there, and Srila Prabhupada walked out of his door with his gumsho on. And Patita Pavan threw his arms up, you know, very loudly, Jai, Srila Prabhupada. And, you know, we paid our full obeisances, dandavats. And Prabhupada just walked into the bathroom. And he was in there only about 20 or 30 seconds. And then he came back out. And Patita Pavan again, you know, Jai, Srila Prabhupada. And we paid our dandavats. And Prabhupada walked into our room, into his room. So it was very simple and I can remember the first night that Srila Prabhupada was there, and because those rooms were usually where the brahmacharis used to live, so we were sleeping in the basement then. And I can remember thinking, Srila Prabhupada is actually here. You know, he was just like right above me, you know, from the ceiling. But I distinctly remember I also had this understanding that Srila Prabhupada's always been here. You know, it was in the temple, but his presence was actually always there, but now he was personally there. So the next morning, he gave initiations and also installed the Radha Gopi Balava deities in Boston. Prabhupada personally helped bathe the deities, and I can remember he was also just sitting on a little flat mat on the floor as the fire sacrifice was going on. And I was sitting, you know, right opposite where he was. And I have such wonderful memory of Srila Prabhupada polishing Radharani. And he was just, you know, polishing Radharani. And then he would lean back and look at Radharani and then polish some more. And you could tell that he was fully conscious that, you know, he was actually serving Radharani in such an intimate way there. And he gave, he read from the Brahma Samhita. He read from the book, the Brahma Samhita prayers, in a very slow melody, wonderful melody. And when it was time for me to come up and get my name and beads, some devotees had already gone, you know, before me, got their names, and it was my turn. And, you know, I paid my obeisances in front of Srila Prabhupada. He asked me what are the four regulative principles and how many rounds I chanted, 16. And then he gave me my name. He said, your name is Soma Das Das. And he said, Soma means the moon. And I was thinking, the moon? You know, I thought we were supposed to get, like, names of Krishna. So I looked up at Srila Prabhupada, and he had big, big smile. And just looking at his face, like, everything else melted away. And a big smile, and he looked at me, and he said, you are moon-like. And I think that the next person to get his name was my godbrother, Sudas Prabhu. Me and him, we both got two Dasas in our name. My name is Soma Das, and then, of course, Das. And this next devotee, his spiritual name was Sudas. And Srila Prabhupada said, he had you know, his beads in his hand, and he said, Sudas means very nice servant of Krishna. Do you understand? And he was handing him his beads, and the devotee said, no. And Prabhupada said, Prabhupada took the beads back, and he said, do you want to be or don't you? And then he smiled and gave him his beads. But all through the time, Prabhupada, he was just sitting on the floor, and we just had this little flat kind of cushion for him. And actually, the only I got the opportunity to actually make the Vyasasan to help build it in Boston. He only sat on it once. It wasn't very nice. It was a little rickety. It had some posts up with some cloth, you know, hanging from the top. He only sat on that one time, the first time he came to the temple from the airport. And the rest of the time he just, you know, sat on the floor where the fire sacrifices were. And also our altars were very simple. It was just a plywood box, you know, with some cloth on top of it. And because Srila Prabhupada was there, there were some other temple presidents and, of course, Satsrup Maharaj. They decided, well, we should take advantage of Prabhupada's presence and let's have another fire sacrifice, you know, in the evening. So that day there was two fire sacrifices, a fire sacrifice in the morning, and then in the evening Prabhupada gave another initiation. And same, you know, sat on the floor on this little cushion. I've seen some nice pictures of it, you know, chanting on everyone's beads. And it was a very, very wonderful time. Prabhupada, on a morning walk, he was talking about ghosts. The Boston Temple was actually an old funeral home. And where the deities were, the altar was where they used to display, you know, the dead bodies for when people to come in there, and that's where we had our and the deities. So it was a ghostly, you know, haunted place, but wonderful. So many pastimes of the ISKCON. When ISKCON Press was there, the same building, Srila Prabhupada walked into the press, and he said, "This is my heart," you know, ISKCON Press printing his books. And as a new devotee, when I first came there, it was always so wonderful to hear about all these stories of Srila Prabhupada from the senior Vaishnavas. Of course, there's, you know, one very nice story of Prabhupada just standing in front of the. There were very little Radha Krishna deities, and he started crying, and he turned to the devotees, and he said, "I'm simply praying to Radha and Krishna that I don't fall into Maya." That was a mood of Srila Prabhupada. And there was, close to the temple there, it was in 38 North Beacon Street in Alston, which is right a part of Boston, there was a park, and on one morning walk, Prabhupada said, "This is the proper way to walk up a hill," and he walked up the hill kind of like zigzag, just teaching us everything, you know, even how to walk up a hill. I'm sure Prabhupada was expert in everything. And also on that walk, I wasn't there, but I, you know, hearing this from devotees, one devotee during the walk asked Srila Prabhupada, "Does Mother Yasoda know what Krishna is going? No, does Krishna know what Mother Yasoda is going to do before she does it?" And Prabhupada said yes. And he kept walking in silence. And then he said, "Don't think like that." And then walked a little more, and he said it again, "Don't think like that." And then he stopped, and he said, "Don't think that if you knew the future, you would become bored, that if Krishna knows the future, that he becomes bored." He said, "Don't think like that." So, and that was the next time that I met Srila Prabhupada was the next year, 1972. It was in July in New York. And actually, I was talking with Rod Radnath Maharaj was there also, although I don't remember seeing him. But because of my disappointment of not being able to hear Srila Prabhupada speak, you know, when he first came to the temple, after, you know, greeting him at the airport, I decided not to go to the airport in New York, you know, to greet Srila Prabhupada. I wanted to wait at the temple so I'd be there when he got there and I could, you know, hear him speak. So all the devotees went out to the to greet Srila Prabhupada, and Radnath was there to greet Srila Prabhupada. He told me a little bit about it, how Vishnu John Swami was leading the kirtan, and they're having a big kirtan, and then everybody was getting off the plane. Everyone got off the plane, but there was no Prabhupada. And it turned out they were at the wrong gate. So they had to go to the other gate to greet Srila Prabhupada. But as I was waiting in the temple for Srila Prabhupada to come, one Mataji with a tray with a garland that came up to me and said, "Can you put this garland on Srila Prabhupada when he comes into the temple room?" And I thought, oh, it was a good idea. I didn't go to the airport. But then I was wondering, you know, should I, as soon as he walks into the temple, should I give him the garland or not? And Jai Dwaita Swami was also there. And so I asked him, you know, how should I put this garland on Srila Prabhupada? And he said, "Let him come in and offer his obeisances to the deities, and then when he sits on the Vyasasan, then you can put the garland on him." So I did that, and I got the great fortune of putting a garland on Srila Prabhupada. He allowed me to do that. And then I sat down close to the Vyasasan, and Srila Prabhupada sat down and he looked around and he asked for kartals. And somebody behind me nudged me in the shoulder and, you know, handed me some kartals, and I handed them to the next devotee, who handed them to Prabhupada, and he chanted Jai Radha Madhava. But then midway through Jai Radha Madhava, even, you know, the chanting was still going on, he said, "Where are my kartals?" He wanted his kartals. His personal servant hadn't brought them yet, but he was there then, and he got his Prabhupada's personal kartals, and he used them. I don't. Do you remember much more about that visit? But then the next time that I saw Srila Prabhupada was in 1972 for the, in New Vrindavan, was the Bhagavad Dharma Discourses. And Srila Prabhupada came for that, and I was, you know, a devotee in Boston. And we drove down in a big bus. We had an old school bus that we had painted green with the Hare Krishna mantra on it, and we all drove down in that bus, and Prabhupada was going to be arriving in Pittsburgh. So we went to the Pittsburgh temple, and we were there like a day early, but as soon as I got to the Pittsburgh temple, they made an announcement that if anybody knows anything about carpentry or construction, you know, they need them right away down at New Vrindavan because they're trying to get everything ready for Prabhupada. So I knew a little bit. He was, I mean, I'm a Malecha with Sudra tendencies, you know, so I had done some construction, and that's mostly been my service, you know, throughout my stay within ISKCON, is doing construction and things. But I got a ride right away to go down to New Vrindavan to help get ready for Srila Prabhupada. And the first thing that they had me do was they were trying to finish the marble floor in the temple room. They had just built a new temple room, little addition onto this old farmhouse in Bahulaban. And I was holding the cord as somebody was sanding the floor. And I had sanded many floors before, wood floors, not marble floors. But, you know, I thought I knew a little bit about sanding floors. And I forget what the discussion was, but as I was, you know, just holding the cord, and of course I was thinking, you don't really need anybody to hold a cord when you're sanding it, but that was the service they had me do. But there was a little discussion on about, you know, what to do with the floor, and I can't remember exactly what it was, and I gave a comment, you know, thinking that I knew something, and the devotee who was in charge there, sanding of doing the construction, he looked at me and he said, you know, your problem is you have no knowledge. But then, so then after that, he didn't want me, you know, to help him sand the floor. And Kirtanananda Swami came up and he had a little picture of the Vyasa Pooja book. There was a little picture where in Varshana, they had carried Srila Prabhupada around on a palanquin. And there were some beautiful pictures carrying Srila Prabhupada in a palanquin. So I was asked, you know, can you make a palanquin so that we can carry Srila Prabhupada up the hill where he was going to give the Bhagavad Dharma discourses? So I said, well, okay, I'll try. You know, do you have any wood? And they said, well, you know, go look behind that building. And it was an old corn crib, just a very rotten old building, old farm building. And there was just some, like, rotten, you know, completely rotten wood and broken glass and things. but I saw there was an old pallet, which is like a packing thing for shipping. So I thought, oh, I could use this pallet to, you know, to make a palanquin. And I asked again, you know, do you have any, like, other materials that we can make this palanquin with, you know, some poles, you know, for carrying? And they said no, but they said, here's an axe, you know, go out in the woods and chop down a tree, you know, and get some wood. And so armed with a little axe, and got some poles, and they had some rope. So it was just an old pallet, and we got three poles that we tied together so that six people could help carry Srila Prabhupada with some rope going down to this pallet. And the Matajis there decorated it very nice, put a wonderful cushion on it, and decorated it with ribbons and things. So it looked kind of nice. And sure enough, when the time came for Srila Prabhupada to be carried up in the palanquin, they drove him down in the car to the bottom of the hill where the barn was, and it was, I don't know if it was like a half a mile or something, or a quarter mile to walk. It's kind of like an S road, old, just a dirt road, to the top of the hill where they had a pavilion where Srila Prabhupada was going to give the Bhagavad Dharma discourses. Anyways, Prabhupada, he came and he sat down on the palanquin, and we lifted him up and he carried him up the hill. Although it wasn't, I could tell, it wasn't very comfortable, and Prabhupada was holding onto the ropes, you know. It wasn't, you know, very nice. But he all the way up, and we left the, you know, the palanquin on the stage, and Prabhupada had a Vyasa-san up there. He gave, you know, a wonderful talk. There was also Radha Damodar deities and Big Lord Jagannath deities. And after he gave his lecture, he just got right up off the Vyasa-san, walked over and sat down on the palanquin again. And I got the great fortune of carrying Srila Prabhupada all the way back down the hill. And but it wasn't very nice. And the next day, they decided not to use the palanquin, and they just drove him up in a it was a little Volkswagen. They drove him up to the top of the hill. But Srila Prabhupada, he gave, I believe, 10 lectures up on top of that hill. And a very, very wonderful time. And then I believe the next time I was already living in New Vrindavan. I moved to New Vrindavan in 1973. Of course, my first time visiting New Vrindavan was in 72 for the Bhagavad Dharma discourses, and I remember seeing Radhanath Maharaj there. And he had like long hair and a little beard and things then. But I remember seeing him at the bathing ghat, and he was very deliberate and serious devotee. But I didn't, you know, notice anything really out of the ordinary except for that. And then I can remember I was on traveling Sankirtan. For years I was doing some traveling Sankirtan out of Boston. And we did a lot of traveling. We went all the way down into Mexico even. And in Mexico, actually, our traveling Sankirtan party got arrested and thrown out of the country. We were very fortunate they didn't put us in jail, but they gave us 7 days to get out of the country. We were down in Acapulco. So we were coming on our way back to Boston, and we stopped in at New Vrindavan. And I can remember seeing Radhanath Maharaj chanting japa in the corner, and I was thinking, wow, that guy's still here, because I remember seeing him, you know, back in 72. But the next time I saw Srila Prabhupada was in 1974, and he came just for a few days in the summer. I can't remember which month. I remember it was a little bit chilly, and I was living with Radhanath Maharaj up in Old Vrindavan, helping do some of the pujari work. And of course, everybody had gone down to Bahulaban to see Srila Prabhupada. He was going to give his Bhagavatam class in the morning program. But me, Radhanath, and Gostavihari stayed up to take care of the deities. And my service at that time was working on Prabhupada's palace. Actually, there was only two of us that were working on the palace at that time, myself and Gostavihari. And we thought, you know, Prabhupada was probably going to come and look at his palace after the morning program at Bahulaban. So we hurriedly, you know, dressed the deities, and then we changed and we ran. It was, you know, down the hill across where Keshi got. So there was a little waterfall in New Vrindavan. And we just ran about 2 miles to where the palace was. And just as we got there, we saw this car going around the corner, and Srila Prabhupada was in the car, and he was coming up to see the palace. So Srila Prabhupada, this is the first time in 74, and it was basically just some concrete blocks. You know, there was no roofs anywhere, and it's just mud, dirt. There's a little bit of marble they had set on this one floor. And Prabhupada got out of the car, and he was smiling. So had such a big smile on his face. And Prabhupada, you know, he held his head up very high. And Kirtanananda was showing him the palace. There wasn't much there, you know, just some cement. And Srila Prabhupada was poking things with his cane, poking the wall, poking where the door jamb was. But he had a big smile. And Bali Mardan was there, and he mentioned that in the Krishna book, it says that, you know, Krishna's palaces were decorated with jewels, and they didn't even need electricity. They were illuminated with all these jewels. Prabhupada smiled, and he waved his cane, and he said, "These devotees are my jewels." And there was a pile. There was no roof there, and the cement we were using we covered with plastic. And Srila Prabhupada said, "This should be covered, more." And I couldn't understand why he was saying that, because it was already covered with plastic, you know. But after he had left, a few days after he left, when we actually uncovered the cement to use it, we had noticed that actually rain had gotten in and a lot of it was ruined. And Prabhupada was just very observant and very keen like that, noticing everything. And then in the Prabhupada, after a little tour of the palace, he went to get in his car, and everybody else ran to their car, a few other people that had come up. And just me and Gosavihari were standing there. And Srila Prabhupada looked up at us and he said, "So you're working here?" And I turned around because I couldn't believe he was talking to me, to see if there was anybody else he might be talking to. But there was no one there. And it was just me and Gosavihari. So we said, "Yes, Srila Prabhupada." And Prabhupada said, "Thank you very much." And then he turned to Kirtanananda and he said, "So you're going to install Radha Vrindavan Chandra here?" And he said, "No, Srila Prabhupada, we want to install you here." And Prabhupada said, "That is proper." So we're trying to make something wonderful for Srila Prabhupada, where he could come and, you know, translate his books. And Prabhupada stayed in a little gray house just a little ways away. And I came at one time, me and Gosavihari went down there to, you know, try to get a little nectar from Prabhupada. And Prabhupada had just finished taking prasadam. And Brahmananda, who was Prabhupada's servant or secretary at that time, when he finally came down with the plate, he said, you know, we were asking for some remnants. He said, "It's all gone, except for there's a few pits from the cherry that Prabhupada ate." And, of course, we gladly ate those pits. And Prabhupada, he only stayed a few days at that time. He gave big initiations out on the patio at Bahulaban, where they set up a Vyasasan for him. But then next time I saw Srila Prabhupada was in 1976, when he came to New Vrindavan. Stayed, I think, 10 days. And I was still working on the palace. And of course, by that time, a lot more was done. There was more devotees. And it was just such a wonderful time. We had some new teak wood, just like this. things, teakwood furniture carved for Srila Prabhupada in Bombay. And it was brought there, and Srila Prabhupada was, he just looked so wonderful sitting on his Vyasasan, so regal. There had these carved lions on the side, and Prabhupada would be rubbing his hand on the lion while he was speaking, you know, denouncing the scientists. And it was one interesting little story of Prabhupada. When I first became a devotee, hearing all these stories in Boston about Prabhupada in the early days in New York and how, you know, he didn't know a lot of things of American culture and how to do things, and devotees would, you know, offer him a little information, you know, serve Srila Prabhupada in that way. And somehow or other, I developed a desire that I also wanted to serve Prabhupada by offering him, you know, some information. So it just so happened in a morning walk, it was the morning walk where Srila Prabhupada was coming up to the old Vrindavan farm to see Radha Vrindavan Nath. And in the beginning of the walk, we're all walking along. I was right behind Srila Prabhupada. A calf came down in front of everyone who was walking, and Prabhupada stopped and he said, "How old is that calf?" And I was right behind Prabhupada, so I could hear him ask. And I was looking around to see who the coward boys who might know, you know, the exact age of the calf, but they weren't there. So I looked really hard at the calf to see if I could see how old it was, and I noticed that, you know, it didn't have any milk bag yet. It was young. So I said, "Oh, Srila Prabhupada, it doesn't have a milk bag yet, so it's young." And Prabhupada looked at me and he said, "I know that." So then I was thinking, what a fool I am to think that I could, you know, offer some information to Srila Prabhupada, you know. But still, he had asked. And the next day, after his Bhagavatam class down at Pahulaban, when he was walking out to his car, and devotees opened up the door for him, you know, to get into the car, but he didn't get in his car. He looked out over the top of his car to the hillside across the road. And I was standing right there, and he turned to me and he said, "What's planted over there?" And I happened to know from Madhava Ghosh that they had planted mung beans over there. So I said, "Oh, those are mung beans over there, Srila Prabhupada." And he said, "Oh, thank you very much." And he gave me the opportunity to give him some little bit of knowledge. But Prabhupada was so wonderful in that way that, you know, he let anybody do some service for him. And, of course, that's such a wonderful facet of devotional service that no matter who we are, we can always do something. You know, there's never a time when we can't do some devotional service. You know, it's devotional service is like that. It's not, it doesn't have any material time or circumstances limiting it. And at every moment, in any moment, we can always do some service. So he stayed there 10 days, and of course, a lot of different pastimes. I'm sure you've heard them all before. You know, Radhanath Swami's Sandesh and how much Prabhupada liked it, and Chandramali's para. Chandramali cooked para, and Srila Prabhupada, he ate, was it three of them or four of them? Three. And devotees were amazed. They never saw Prabhupada eat milk sweets like that. And it's from Chandramali's bhakti that was in it. And Srila Prabhupada ate them. course, Chandramali is very special devotee. Served many years in New Vrindavan, and he cooked milk sweets for many, many years there. A simple service, but he did it with such love and devotion. And of course, in those times, it was simple. It was austere. There was wood fires. He had to split the wood, and they had the place, we call them the pits, where they do the cooking in the pits. And he was there every day, you know, cooking. I remember one time in the pits, they used to bring the milk. They would make it into the milk sweets. They'd also make curd, so there'd be whey there. And they had these plastic pickle barrels filled with whey. And Chandramali was making his milk sweets, his para. And he got a little too close to the fire, and his dhoti caught on fire. And soon his dhoti was just flames coming up. So he jumped in the barrel of whey. But it was, you know, it was because there was always like a lack of Lakshmi. Things were very simple, poor. You know, in the winter it was cold and muddy all the time. And I know for, you know, myself, like going down to the Ghat, they didn't have running water. They just a little stream, and they hollowed it out a little bit, put plastic in it, and you'd have to go down there in the morning and, you know, scoop some water out and pour it over you for a bath. And of course, when it rained, it was muddy and the water was muddy. And when it got cold, sometimes, you know, it would freeze. You have to break the ice to get the water. Kind of an interesting story. You know, I thought, you know, and it was hard for me to stay there. It was austere. And, of course, my mind was, you know, going crazy. You know, so austere. But one time, Radhanath Swami, he went to Kirtanananda and said, "I want to leave. I'm not going to stay here anymore." And Kirtananda said, "Why?" And Radhanath said, "Because there's too much sense gratification here." And Kirtananda, he never heard anybody want to leave for that reason. It was always the opposite. But by Krishna's arrangement, so mercifully, Radhanath did stay. And I feel very fortunate that I was able to get his association and to see his example of he was always very deliberate, very sober, serious, fixed in his determination. Srila Prabhupada had already accepted him, you know, as his disciple and given him a spiritual name, but he didn't feel like he was ready enough, so he didn't accept his initiation at first. Of course, because he could understand that it's something not to be taken lightly, initiation from the spiritual master. He actually accepts your karma. And our only link to Krishna is through the spiritual master, and we have to, you know, dedicate our life to serve him. We become, you know, sold out to our spiritual master. And of course, Radhanath was very conscious of that. And also, when he was offered sannyas, you know, he didn't want to take it at first. And for me, that's always been, you know, a very good example and a very, you know, sobering fact. When I first got to New Vrindavan, you know, when I came there to live in 1973, in the summer of 73, I came there to help carpentry and do construction. But there was a group of devotees known as the Coward Boys, Radhanath, Swami Taru, Parambrahma, Devaki. There's a group of them known as the Coward Boys, and they would take care of the cows, and they would milk the cows and clean the barn. And they were very blissful. And I wanted to associate with them. And after a while of repeated asking, Kirtanananda let me join them for a short time in the barn. And I got to help them. And the thing is, they were always talking about Krishna. It was amazing for me, because when I came there in 1973, when I left Boston, I was actually like the oldest devotee there, although I was young in age. I had been in, the temple longer than like anybody. And when I got to New Vrindavan, I was a little proud, and of course I still am. And I remember going out into the fields to get hay for the cows, and we were telling stories from Krishna book, and I was telling a story, and of course I forgot, a lot of the details. But Radhanath Swami and Taru, they knew all the details. I was amazed how much Krishna conscious they were, and how well they knew the scriptures. They just knew the pastimes. It was a wonderful thing to work with them like that. And being very austere, the prasadam was very simple. But every Sunday, we'd have a big feast, and everybody looked forward to the Sunday feast. And Parambrahma Prabhu, his service was every Saturday night. He would stay up late grinding chickpeas to make into chickpea flour so they could have the Radhavandava Chandra could have ladus for the Sunday feast. And of course, it's kind of hard to describe today, but if you got one ladu, it was. Because everything else was so austere, it was so much wanted and relished that it was just like a valuable gem. So, anyways, one Sunday feast, Radhanath Maharaj and Parambrahma asked me if I could help them bring the cows back in for milking. They were in the back pasture, way in the back. We had to walk out and bring the cows in. So I said, sure, I'd love to go with you. And we started walking back there. And I can still remember Radhanath. We should just wear wraparounds. And Radhanath had this old brown chada that I believe he got in India when he was first in India. That he used to wear it all the time, this old brown chada. And we're going out there, and all of a sudden Radhanath started saying, Krishna's name is so sweet. I really love chanting my japa, and this japa is so sweet. And he pulled his hand out of his bead bag, and he had a ladu, in his hand. And he threw it to me, and I caught the ladu. Of course, where is it? Madhu Mangal, the ladus. And then Parambrahma started saying the same thing. He goes, yeah, I really love chanting Hare Krishna. It's so sweet. And he pulled his hand out of his bead bag. He had a ladu. And both of them had their bead bags were full with ladus. And and at that time, that was, like more than $1 million, to have those ladus. Just thinking of Parambrahma, though, he was the temple president at the Brahmachari Ashram. And, of course, in 1973, in the summer, some like motorcycle gang came and attacked New Vrindavan and actually shot some devotees and broke the deities, Radha Vrindavan Chandra. And after like 1 year had passed and the brahmacharis were living up at the old Vrindavan farm, Param Brahma wanted to do a commemoration of that day to remember how Radharani, Radha Vrindavan Chandra protected the devotees. So he wanted to do a commemoration about it, but his way of doing it was he told me and Gostavihari to Jai Radha Gopinath, Jai. He told me and Gostavihari, he actually gave us a gun, with bullets in it, and he said, make a lot of noise to make it sound like we're being attacked, and fire the gun, so it seems like we're being attacked, during Bhagavatam class. So because I want to, speak about this and commemoration of when the deities were attacked. So I don't know why he told me, but I was let in on the secret. But I figured, okay, Gosavihari can make enough noise and shoot the gun. And I was in Bhagavatam class, and Param Brahma was giving the class. And then all of a sudden, big ruckus outside and gunshots. And everybody thought, oh, no, we're getting attacked again. Demons have come to attack us, with the guns. And people were falling on the floor. Some were trying to hide in the chimney, in the temple room. They really thought that, they'd come with guns again to attack. And Radhanath Maharaj was the pujari dressing Radha Vrindavan Nath at the time. And Param Brahma had forgot to tell him. So Radhanath also thought, we were getting attacked. So he took the deities and wrapped them in his old brown chadar to try to hide them. And I can remember after, we found out that this was, just a staged thing, just to, commemorate that event. Radhanath was a little upset with Param Brahma that he hadn't told him. But those were some of the pastimes. So I guess we should probably stop now. But if there are any questions or comments. Okay, thank you very much. Hare Krishna.